Welcome to Carsey and the Kid. With your hosts, Steve Carsey and Alexander Danilov.
Good morning, everybody. We're doing the Steve Carsey and the Kid show today, which is Saturday, June 25th. All the craziness going on, going around and going on with Steve's schedule, we were able to do it today. So I hope that that you're able to tune in. If not, please kindly download the podcast and all future podcasts. And, of course, stay tuned for carseyandthekid.com for show dates and times, just because it does change week to week. So we do apologize about that, but we're still able to do this on a very regular basis. So we do appreciate the support and patience as we do the show. So, again, welcome to the Steve Carsey and the Kid show. He is Steve Carsey. I am the Kid. Steve, good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning to you, too. Thanks for joining us, everybody. I know it's pretty early this morning, but looking forward to having another great show and to bring you all the news and notes that we possibly can.
Absolutely. So we start off with our one thing. Steve, if you could lead it off, because I have a feeling I know what you're going to go with, and it might be about the town that you're intimately familiar with and what has happened over the past weeks since then.
Yeah, possibly. But my one thing is I'm going with Jose Reyes and the Mets.
Okay.
And I'm going to – I'm not quite sure what the Mets are doing. I know that the Mets are going to try to get Jose Reyes on the cheap, and obviously the Blue Jays and the Rockies are going to have to pay the majority of his salary. I'm not sure how much this guy is going to help him, you know, especially in the clubhouse. I mean, we all know that the clubhouse is, you know, an intimate place. It's a place where, you know, things like to stay. But, you know, the Mets clubhouse was pretty special last year. You know, they did some tremendous things. They got some young players. And to bring a guy like Jose Reyes to the clubhouse and possibly – you know, shuffle things and shake things up, you know, with that young group of guys who have played together and who have gone through some really good moments together, in my opinion, is not going to be a good thing. I mean, I'm going to see if the Mets do sign him and how it plays out and if he's able to help this club, but I think he's going to be more of a detriment than he is a plus to this ball club. And that's my one thing.
Yeah, as early as late yesterday, MLB Trade Rumors put out a story on Jose Reyes, but expected to be signed by the Mets. And I have to agree with you, Steve. Even though they're getting him for cheap, and people are like, well, you know, you're not owing him that much. You could always cut him or designate him or whatever. But that kind of change and that kind of influence might not be, and chances are, should not be what you're looking for in that clubhouse because of everything that's going on already. That's the wrong kind of shakeup, in my opinion. You bring in a guy, you know, let's say it's a few years ago, it's a guy like Justin Morneau, former MVP type of guy like that, has fallen a little bit, and you get him on the cheap, different story. You get guys like that, that's what you're looking for, a guy like Jay Bruce even, especially the season he's having. But when you look at a guy like Jose Reyes, bounced around different places, left a bad taste in his mouth, was threatened to be stabbed by his own manager, Jerry Manuel, in his last go-around with the Mets. So I have to agree with you on here, Steve, just because obviously you make a lot of sense. And Jose Reyes has made a bad name for himself over the years. And even though he's very talented, he hasn't lived up to that either in the last several years. So great first thing to start off with. My first thing is going to be off baseball. It's going to be what happened last Sunday night. We weren't able to do the show since then. So, and obviously for that night, it was Father's Day and a lot of other stuff going on during the week. But to all, I hope you enjoyed Father's Day with your families. If you're fathers, hope you enjoyed it with your kids and loved ones. Steve, I know your family was around. So hopefully you got to enjoy that. Father's Day night was game 7 of the NBA finals. Game 7 was an absolute electric game. The only thing missing was an overtime battle. And quite frankly, the Cavs showed a lot of people a lot of things. Forget the aftermath, you know, after the game celebration, shirts coming off and people crying and pounding the floor and trying to get that, you know, that Instagram moment, that Vine moment. What the Cavs were able to do in securing the first championship in 52 years for the city of Cleveland is absolutely amazing. The team that was the best regular season team in basketball history, maybe in sports history, how dominant they were. to go to Golden State, the Oracle Arena in Oakland, and how loud those fans were, how electric that is, and to be able to win Game 7 when you're already down 3-1 to really start that rally that they went on, the Cavs, really says something about the character of that team and the leadership of that team. Say what you will about LeBron James. Say what you will about J.R. Smith and the rest of the guys on that team. They showed up. They did what they had to do. They won. They brought the championship home. And at the end, that's what it's all about, as long as you do it cleanly and within the rules, obviously, which they did. So a big hat tip to the city of Cleveland for supporting that team for so long. And obviously to LeBron James for bringing a championship along with the rest of that cast, bringing a championship to a city that has needed and so sorely missed that championship for so long in any major sport.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, what a great thing. I'll actually touch on that a little bit later on in the show, but, you know, what a tremendous story for the city of Cleveland and, you know, just what a tremendous job being, you know, a championship caliber team and able to overcome some, you know, some tough moments during, during the playoffs, and not very many people gave them a chance. And, you know, they proved victorious. So nice job by the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Absolutely. We'll touch a little bit more about basketball. Some big news going on, including Kevin Durant's story, including the Knicks actually getting in the news for something positive, in my opinion, positive, and some other stuff going on. So, but let's turn our attention back to baseball. We'll be talking a lot about the MLB All-Star Game today, and especially leading up to the All-Star Game. We'll give you the latest leaders in voting and get our take on some of the stuff that's going on there. Major League Baseball, Albert Pujols tying Harmon Killebrew for 11th all-time with 573 career home runs, kind of doing it quietly. It just seems like, Steve, when these types of big moments happen, talked about David Ortiz last week tying a plethora of amazing talent, William McCovey, Ted Williams, and tying them with 521 home runs last week. And then now this week we have Albert Pujols tying the great Harmon Killebrew, one of the greatest power hitters of all time, one of the most feared hitters of all time. But it just doesn't seem like it has that electricity anymore, Steve, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, you know, Pujols has, you know, really been under the radar type of player anyway. You know, in big moments, you know, you hear about him, but it's not publicized. And again, you know, I mean, he's played in some places. I mean, obviously St. Louis, where he did a tremendous job, and now he plays on the West Coast. You know, we're not a lot of people on the East Coast, you know, get to see a lot of the stuff that goes on and a lot of records that he breaks, because a lot of people are always sleeping. You know, these games come on late, and, you know, they're playing at 10:05 Eastern time, and it just doesn't get the publicity that, you know, it probably should, and what it deserves as far as Albert Pujols goes. But we all know what kind of player he is. He's a great player. He's a team leader. And, you know, he's a guy who has done tremendous things in this game.
Absolutely. Steve, I know you don't like the conversation as much about pitchers getting MVP awards, but I have to ask this early in the show because it's just it might actually set the stage for the conversation later on. But Clayton Kershaw, we talk about him all the time. It's not even an obligation. We talk about him because he's so freaking good. He's so consistent, so amazing. And even though people were calling for him last year that he, you know, he's done, his career is over, he's struggling so much, this is it, his downfall was over-dramatized. So this year, he's this is a stat going into their game yesterday night. The team, when he starts, he's 11-1, I believe. They're 14-1 when he starts. They're 27-32 in games that he doesn't pitch. You know where I'm going with this, an MVP award. Do you think that a guy that's this overwhelmingly good and positive for his team and such a great influence on his team when he's out there, do you think that a guy like this is viable for an MVP award with this kind of unbelievable success that he and his team has when he's out there and how poorly they're doing when he's not there? I mean, under 500 is not really good for a team that's such a great payroll.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think he's a viable option. There's still a lot of season left to go. He's got quite a few starts. And, you know, if he's able to continue to do what he's doing now, you know, come mid-September, he'll definitely have to be in the conversation. But, you know, my feeling is, even though a former pitcher and like to see pitchers win awards. You know, the award is Cy Young, and that's for the best pitcher in the game, in each league. I mean, I think MVP are always viable options if he just continues to dominate the way he's doing for the length of a major league season, because that's very hard to do. It's very hard to stay healthy. It's very hard to make your start every 5 days and to do what he's doing. But, you know, an everyday player who has to go through the grind and has to go out there and play 9 innings every single night and put up the numbers and stay healthy, there's value to that as well. Sometimes I think a little bit more valuable to a team where a guy can go out and play 150 to 155 games and help his team win in multiple facets, whether it be on defense or offense. So to answer your question in short, yes, it's a viable option for Clayton Kershaw. We have seen it before. Justin Verlander, Dennis Eckersley, dominating seasons, have won that award. But it has to be far and beyond what any position player does, in my mind, to get that.
Fair enough. Did have to want to get that conversation out earlier, want to get your take on it. I had a feeling where you were going with that, but it's so hard to deny Clayton Kershaw what he's been able to do. I have other pitchers. Obviously, you can't really look at the Cubs because they're so great no matter who's pitching, it seems. And you have guys like Jason Hamill, Kyle Hendricks having really great seasons, not even really being talked about except on the show, even in regional broadcasts. But we'll get more on that later in league leaders and stuff like that. And obviously, we'll be talking about Clayton Kershaw a lot today and in general. So I'll move over to some of the other news that's going on. By the way, the other player I was thinking about that couldn't get out for some reason, the big hurt, also ending his career, 521 career home runs. Those are the three that that David Ortiz had tied when we spoke about it last week. I want to shift gears a little bit again, Steve, before we get back into baseball, because the Rio Olympics and obviously the controversy about that and the Zika virus and how bad. We all know what's going on in Venezuela. If you don't, you should really take a look at it. People eating out of the garbage, people doing whatever they can just to stay alive. It's a really devastating situation out there, really sad on both humanitarian reasons. And even if you just look at that data, stats, numbers, and you're just that kind of person and you don't look at the human aspect, there's nothing to say, oh, that's pretty cool. That's a positive. At least you have that to hang your hat on. There's nothing like that going on down there. It's kind of the same story in so many other parts of South America, not to get political, but the Rio Olympics is sports, obviously, and there's a lot of players that are saying Rory McIlroy, athlete, great for the game of golf, great for the global for a global brand, not going. He said he spoke with his family, spoke with his friends. He's not going till Rio. There's a lot of people that are coming to the same that are having the same conversation with their families, and they're deciding not to. Pau Gasol says he's going to go. Steve, if it were you, regardless what sport it was, would you go down to Rio? And yes, there's a pride to represent your country, but you don't know what can happen to you, even when you step off, you know, out of your hotel because of all the stuff that's going on down there. Plus, you have the Zika virus out there looming. So what would you do in that scenario?
Yeah, you know, that's a tough one. It's one of those where it's a very personal decision on everybody's part. You know, I just think if each individual feels that, you know, he's going to put in harm's way or he has an opportunity to contract the Zika virus, just by the amount of you know, with the odds of getting bit by a mosquito or, you know, having that chance, then, you know, it's a tough call, man. It comes around once every 4 years. You know, you have an opportunity to, you know, represent your country, you know, to listen to your national anthem, to be, you know, a great athlete competing against other great athletes around the world. So, you know, I think all these athletes are in a tough spot, you know, especially the swimmers. You know, they're saying that the waters aren't as clean as maybe what they should be, and yeah, absolutely. And you know, you never want to put yourself in harm's way when you're going to compete for, you know, for a medal. And, you know, it's hard to win. And if you have all of these other things on your mind besides the focus of competing and the focus of winning, you're not going to be at your best. And that's what I think some of these athletes are doing. They don't feel like, you know, maybe mentally they'll be at their best. You know, physically, who knows where they're at. But I think it just comes down to each individual having their own choice and making that choice that fits best for them.
And not to get overly gross, but there's a lot other stuff going on because of Zika virus. Athletes are given 450,000 condoms. I know it's something we don't talk about for obvious reasons, but it's very relative, the story. It's three times more than was given in London, so there's obviously a big concern there. You mentioned swimmers and water. And just in general, just drinking, brushing your teeth even. I know when we go down to Cancun or any part of Mexico, which we haven't in a long time because I got sick last time we went down, that was many moons ago, but they give you a bottle of water that you pretty much live there for how long, and you have to perform at your best. You can't afford to get sick, get the flu, get something. You can't afford to be run down. You have to be tip-top shape because you know what? Everybody else is trying to do the same thing and be in tip-top shape. So the Rio Olympics, unfortunately, marred by you know, the devastating scenarios there, both humanitarian and otherwise with Zika. And obviously, there's no answers in sight because politicians as a whole always seem to create more issues. That's a whole different conversation. But we'll continue watching that. We're very close to the Rio Olympics now. And again, a lot of athletes, a lot of big name athletes saying that they're going to pass on that. Steph Curry also, but that's for a different reason. He's trying to heal his leg and his ankles. But shifting back to baseball, Steve, I'm sorry, I want to ask you about that again before it slipped my mind. But going back to some of the news that's going on in the game of baseball today, we have Aroldis Chapman pitching, throwing 103 plus miles an hour, seems to continue to do well, and seems to continue to just throw harder and harder every single time. So when you look at a guy like that with his resume, how hard he's been able to pitch, for how long he's been able to do it, and how dominant he's been, now throwing over 103 miles an hour, pretty much at will, the Yankees have a big decision at the end of the year. Let's say he continues to go down this route. You know he's going to command the biggest contract the closer would ever get. They have Betances there, who's been great and then struggled and kind of been inconsistent, even though he has really great stuff. Andrew Miller's been electric since they got him. 2 years left on that contract. He's a little older. What do you do in that scenario if you're the Yankees? Their team struggling with the 500 mark. Who knows if they're going to be able to make a push later on. Mark Teixeira is supposed to be coming back. You don't know what he's going to be. You have the A-Rod scenario. A-Rod's not really doing much at all this year. Do you, if you're the Yankees in this quasi-rebuilding mode, Do you move one of these the back end of your guys, or maybe move two of them?
You know, I really think it all depends what you're going to get in return for each one of these guys. If you're not in the race and you can upgrade your ball club, because ultimately that's what it comes down to when the trading deadline comes, is can I upgrade my ball club, whether it's now or for the future, to continue to win? Then you might have to move one of these guys or both of them. You'll get a king's ransom for both of these guys, and you'll be able to restock your system if your scouts are doing their job and are out finding, you know, quality talent in whatever organization is out there that wants these guys. We all know that the LA Dodgers wanted Chapman, and we all know that the LA Dodgers are loaded in their minor league system. So, you know, that's an automatic fit for a trade if they're still interested. And then Andrew Miller, I think being a left-handed power arm out of the pen, there'll be multiple teams interested in bidding for him if the Yankees are willing to put him on the trading block.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what they do. There's going to be a lot of buyers and sellers this year. You have the Cleveland Indians having a great first half of the season. That talent, that pitching is absolutely amazing, even with the inconsistency. Some of the frontline guys, well, really the major frontline guy, which is Corey Kluber, former Cy Young winner, they're still maintaining. They've won seven in a row, Steve, and four games up on the world champion Kansas City Royals. They've been incredible. You have guys like Tomlin, Trevor Bauer, just really stepping it up. They weren't really expecting much from them. Actually, I think Trevor Bauer is just a temporary fill-in for a period of time, and he's been absolutely ridiculous this year. And I think his last start might have actually been his best start. So you have a lot of potential there, and you have got teams that are going to be looking to add. I'm not saying that the Indians are the best fit for who the Yankees have, but I love what's going to happen the next month and a half. Because you have a lot of teams that are in the hunt and still trying to figure it out. I mean, look at Houston, 8-10, game and a half back of the wild card, 9 games back in that division. That's a problem. They're 2 games over 500, but they've won 6 in a row. They had a 9-run first inning yesterday. This team is turning it around, and who would have thunk it considering how poorly they started the season off? You have all these teams starting to turn it up. We haven't really even seen the Toronto Blue Jays turn it up. The Yankees are a 500 team. They can compete. They're 2.5 back of the wild card. This is going to be really impressive. I mean, just look at the NL Central. You have the top 4 teams, well, teams 2 through 4, just 2.5 back of the wild card. The same thing in the East. In the AL West, you have the top, the 2 and 3 teams, Houston, Seattle, also 2.5 back of that wild card. So there's going to be a lot of trading, a lot of activity going around. Don't be surprised if you see some major names like Ryan Braun get dealt to one of these teams. And again, it's going to be an amazing ride here, Steve.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of movement, I think, at the trading deadline this year. I think, as you said, there's a lot of teams bunched up. There's a lot of teams that feel like they have an opportunity to compete to get to the playoffs. And we all know once you get to the playoffs, you never know what can happen. You can get hot and you can go on a run, especially if you have a really good pitching staff who can keep you in ball games and you can win low-scoring games. So that's what the playoffs is all about. And it's going to be a lot of fun coming up here the next month or so and see what kind of transpires as far as trades go.
By the way, one of the teams that I believe are going to be looking to bolster the back end of their bullpen, who would have thunk it? The St. Louis Cardinals, who are now second place in that division, 10 games back. This is a team that won 100 games last year, 10 games back in that division because the Cubs are so freaking good. It's so tough. You have Trevor Rosenthal, who just absolute destruction this year. Didn't record an out yesterday. Gave up 3 runs on 2 hits, 1 walk, no strikeouts. Got the loss, got the blown save. They can't afford to do this. The St. Louis Cardinals, no team could afford to do this, especially when you're trying to keep pace in that division somehow between 10 games. Overcome 10-game deficits before, but it's very hard to do. But you still want to try to get into the wild card hunt. And when they do that, it was a 3-1 game going into the ninth inning, and the Seattle Mariners just took it to Rosenthal. His ERA is now closer to 6 than it is to 5. His WHIP is over 2. So, again, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Again, some of the teams that we're seeing surge probably at the right moment here, Steve. Again, going into the hotter days of the summer, you have teams like the Texas Rangers that the ball is about to start flying there. They're already 20 games over 500. They're 8-2 in their last 10. So keeping pace so the Astros aren't really able to gain much ground on them. But, again, the Astros winning 6 in a row there, Texas losing last night. But the Rangers are almost at full strength now with Yu Darvish back, and he's only going to get stronger. They got him later in the season because coming off that injury. He's only going to get stronger. His arm is going to be a little more fresh than some of the other guys. They've had some inconsistency, just on the DL, which is a little, which is bad for them. I think he was 5-0 or 6-0. And you have some of the other teams that are starting to get hot as well, and you have other teams falling off. But you have the Washington Nationals losing 6 in a row now, Steve, and the same conversation begins. Who are these Washington Nationals? Are they the team that dominated the first half, or are they a team now that's struggling and they're 12 games over 500, but they've lost 6 in a row, and they're not doing really well on the road to begin with. They're only 4 games above 500 there. The Mets haven't really played like the Mets we would imagine the Mets would play. So let's take a look at some of these teams, Steve, and let's break it down. And I'd like to get your take on these. Pittsburgh Pirates, 4 games under 500, 2-8 in their last 10. Really struggling. Talked about McCutchen last week, not having the McCutchen-type season. Liriano's been pretty much ghost this year. He's been really terrible. Let's get your take on whether the Pirates are who they are today or they're much better than they're actually playing. So the Pirates will be the first team we talk about.
Yeah, I think the Pirates are who they are today. There was a lot of upside with the Pirates coming into the season with their pitching staff, with what they've done, last year and the leader in McCutchen. But, you know, there's some stories out there that McCutchen isn't right. He's hurt. He was going to go on a DL. And I think there's something wrong with him. I think he continues to play, but he's beat up in some type of fashion. And, you know, they're just not getting the pitching that they got last year, and they're not just getting the overall consistency throughout their lineup as they did as well last year. So, you know, with the Cubs being as hot as they are, and, you know, the St. Louis Cardinals playing, you know, fairly well. They got some holes to fill. St. Louis does, but I just think the Pirates are who they are, and it's going to be, you know, a wasted opportunity for them, and a year that that the Cubs are, you know, looking to dominate that division,
which they're doing very easily right now. Even though playing 500 in their last 10, they're still 24 games over 500, which is tied the most wins in baseball with the San Francisco Giants, which is the next team we're going to talk about, who are 9-1 in the last 10, winning 4 in a row, setting the pace in that division, 7 games up on the LA Dodgers, who are also surging. Now, imagine this, Steve. The Dodgers have won 8 of their last 10. Now, if they were playing 500 ball right now, we're talking about a double-digit lead for the San Francisco Giants. So last year, nobody would have thought, and certainly not me, that I think you gave them a little more credit than I did, about how they were performing. They hung around for most of the season and competed up until really the very end when the Dodgers finally pulled away. But the Giants were really stubborn last year, and this year they're very good. I mean, talk about the front three of that pitching staff. You have some of the other guys. Nobody can really name a star on the offensive side. Of course, you know names like Posey and Hunter Pence, who's been hurt, but there's nobody really shining there. You have Angel the other day, guys like that stepping up. The San Francisco Giants remind me a lot of the San Antonio Spurs. It's just they plug guys in, they do their thing, and they do it well, and they're under the radar every single time. 48 wins. So let's talk about the San Fran Giants, and are they this good?
They're this good. You know, they're as consistent as they come, and it's an even year. Yeah, they always seem to thrive when it's an even year. I know it's coincidence, but you know, everybody, you know, jokes about it and talks about it. But this club is really tremendous. You know, they're consistent from 1 through 9 or 1 through 8 through the lineup. As you talked about, they have the three-headed monster in you know, Mad Bum, Cueto, and Samardzija. Their whole rotation has been, you know, adding value to their ball club. They get timely hitting. They're scoring runs when they need to. They're winning the 10-9 games. They're winning the 3-1 games or 2-1 games. So when you can have that, and you have a good feel of the clubhouse, and you have an understanding of everybody's chipping in and doing their part, you know, it's always a fun season. They're on another, you know, magical ride right now. They're a tremendous ball club. They got the winning feeling, and I think they're only going to get better as they continue to go out through the season.
Agreed. Now, we get one more club in there. Actually, we might get two more clubs in here. The Washington Nationals, again, we spoke about them. We've talked about them at length this year. Bryce Harper hitting in the 250s this year, last year's MVP runaway. MVP, many would say, does have the power numbers so far this year, 15 homers and was, I think, 42 RBIs. But again, he's not the guy that we remember a year ago. So this was always the question for me. And what I told people when he won that MVP is we're in a situation where we don't know who he is. I'm not trying to poo-poo on the guy. We just don't know who he is. Is he the guy of last year who's hitting 340, leading the team and being the runaway MVP and doing all these great things? Even more so. I mean, he's a freak to begin with. Let's get it straight. But, you know, performing on the field is a lot different than having a frame or having the look, as they say, right? So Bryce Harper this year, 15 homers, 42 RBIs, 252 batting average, leading a team who, again, has been inconsistent. You have guys like Jason Worth. Some nights is really good and a team leader, and some nights it's like the guy just, it looks like the guy doesn't know what he's doing. And that's not a knock on him. You just look at the numbers and see that. Washington Nationals, 12 games over 500, losing 6 in a row right now, including yesterday to the lowly Milwaukee Brewers, who are 7 games under 500 there. And they're 3-7 in their last 10. It's not like they've been surging. But the Nationals, are they a 95-win team, or I guess maybe even a 90-win team, or are they more of a team that's just going to fall apart like they did last year?
I'm not so sure if they're going to fall apart, but they're a hard team to kind of figure out. You know, they go on these runs, they play really well in the beginning of the year, and then, you know, as midsummer comes, they start going into this, you know, this lull, and, you know, they seem never to come out of it. I mean, I think we're kind of seeing the effects of what pitching's doing to Bryce Harper right now. They're not giving in to him. They're not, you know, throwing him any good pitches when they're behind in the count. He's getting a little anxious. He's getting a little apprehensive, and he's starting to chase balls out of the strike zone and trying to do more than he's capable of doing. He's going to have to start taking the approach as Bonds took when he was getting pitched the same way, you know. I'm going to take my walks, and I'm going to hit the mistakes when they're made, you know, in the middle of the plate. And I just think, you know, Harper's going out of the strike zone too much. He's chasing balls. He's trying to get two hits and one at bat, or three hits and one at bat. And it's kind of taking a toll on him mentally. So, you know, when you have that type of guy struggling, and then other guys aren't being as consistent as they should be, this is what you fall into. A team that can get hot at times, and another team that can just really not be good if your pitching's just a little bit off.
Absolutely. Now, if people look at Bryce Harper's stats, and he does have 43 RBI, small correction of what I said before, 42. His on-base percentage this year is .397, but what Steve is saying, he is chasing a lot. He's trying to do a lot. He's putting the team on his back, which is what you expect from a leader like him. That .397 on-base percentage, if you're looking at how many times, how they're pitching around him, he's got 58 walks so far this year. He could very easily have had maybe in the 70s, Steve, and that on-base percentage, which looks really good and really solid in today's baseball, could be around the 425, 450 mark. So people need to see how this guy plays, obviously analyze it the way you analyze his game. That .252 batting average is not 500 base percentage. Not them pitches, and he's swinging, trying to make stuff happen. So you're right. He's also not running the base paths as well, not reading the pitchers all that well. So he has 8 stolen bases this year, 6 caught stealing, which is really strange. That's a really bad percentage. First off, you wouldn't really expect him to run all that much just because of who he is. But again, only 8 stolen bases in 14 attempts, also not very good. But Bryce has the rest of the season to go. He obviously has shown what he can do and what he does do. We'll see what he ends up doing the rest of the year. We'll obviously be closely monitoring that and his performance. Let's take a look around the league and just do a quick recap of the team leaders. We have Baltimore a game and a half up in the American League East, a very tough American League East. Again, like we said before, really the Rays are the only team that are falling off. They're 9 games under .500 now. The Yankees winning 2 in a row with the win last night. Mentioned Aroldis Chapman, what he did at the end, pitching 103-plus miles an hour. They're now, again, at .500. They're battling that number all season. Again, one of the best managers in the game, even if he doesn't win the championship, just because of how he's able to make things happen and find a way to make a team a .500 team or better. They really had no business being a playoff team last year, in my opinion. He was able to get them there the year before, above .500, this year at .500. And I believe they'll finish above .500, probably closer to 85-win mark than the 75-win mark. Boston, who I think is going to dominate the second half, Steve. I think Baltimore falls off a bit. I don't think Tomlin's is as good as he's been, although obviously the numbers tell different. AL Central, we talked about a little bit before. Cleveland Indians doing really good work there so far. 12 games over .500, winning 7 straight. And the Royals are starting to turn it up a little bit, but have lost 3 in a row here. But they're only 4 games back in that division. As we all know, 4 games in any division is not safe. That's a weekend series. And all of a sudden, the whole tie changes. That division, we have the White Sox, who have dropped down, now sitting at .500, 37-37. Talk about a team that needs to make game fields in. He's been absolutely disgusting so far on the mound. It's been awful. It would have been better if they didn't make that trade, but, you know, hindsight's 20/20. And they're going to need help at the back end of that bullpen as well. David Robertson's been struggling mightily this year, blowing saves left and right. Well, actually, he's got two blown saves, but his performance has not been great. His ERA, mid threes, it's 3.41. WHIP of 1.45. You just can't do that if you're a closer. So he's been struggling a bit. Maybe bringing a guy that can help him out or take some of the pressure off. At the AL West, again, with the Texas Rangers dominating but are surging, Houston, the Astros, still firmly 9 games back in that division. You have the Seattle Mariners 10 games back in that division. And then you have the Angels, Steve. Who would have thunk it? The Angels 12 games under 500, losing 5 in a row with all that talent, all that depth, 12 games under 500, 16 back in that division. Let's get your take real quick on the LA Angels. And do you think this is the year that they completely sell whatever pieces they have, dismantle, and try to rebuild for the next few years?
Well, they're going to have to. I mean, they've struggled with injuries this year. You know, their lineup has produced some runs, but their pitching staff is just not what it used to be. You know, they have injury after injury. Guys in the rotation shouldn't be in the rotation that are there now. You know, it's just been really a debacle for them. They're going to have to do something. Their minor league system is weak. It's not. It doesn't have much talent in it. And for a team that has pieces at the big league level that's used to winning, like Mike Socha is, you know, they can only spend so much money. You know, they got a lot of dollars in the middle of that lineup, and you know, that's a lot of dollars that they're going to have to contend with for the next couple of years with Pujols and Trout. So they're just going to have to find.
How about the dollars they still have locked up with Josh Hamilton? How bad that's worked out for them? You know, it's amazing. It's a team that has to dismantle that club. And like we talked about earlier in the year, Mike Trout might be one of those guys, as hard as it is to even talk about.
Yeah, the face of the franchise. I don't know if you're going to trade him, but that would definitely be a point where you would restock your ball club as far as major league ready talent and then talent that's on its way up. But you know, having Mike Trout on your team is tough to even think about if you have to trade that, and it's just a shame that they're in this type of situation that we're even talking about that.
Absolutely. Mike Trout's still having a terrific season, hitting over 300, 14 homers, 49 dingers, 49 RBIs, 14 dingers, and above 400 on-base percentage, still doing his thing, even with a team that is not doing as well. By the way, 10 stolen bases, 1 caught stealing, and has 49 walks and 59 Ks this year. So he's striking out too much, still probably strikes out 100 times this year, but not the trajectory that he was on before, and certainly doing his thing on the diamond. It's just, he's an amazing talent. He's only 24, Steve, and it's amazing that he can actually continue to get better from where he is today. But he is that. He's a special kind of guy, generational player, and we'll see what they end up doing with him and the rest of the talent they have on that that club. National League East, National League East, we have the Washington Nationals still maintaining a 3-game lead over the Mets, who won yesterday against the Braves, although the Mets not looking that great, playing 500 ball the last 10. They beat the Braves yesterday 8-6. You do have the charging Marlins, who not fantastic in their last 10, but are doing well. They're only 4 games back in that division. Who would have thought that? You have guys like Marcell Ozuna stepping up. Giancarlo Stanton is about to heat up, in my opinion. You have a lot of talent in that offense. They'll eventually get D. Gordon back. If he's anything close to the player that we saw beforehand, obviously post-steroids, we hope post-steroids, you know, that's going to be a big boon for them. And they're only 1 game back in that wild card. So a lot of contention there. You have the NL Central, not a lot of competition, although the Cardinals are going to be a second-half story, in my opinion. They're getting guys back, guys getting healthy. You have Matt Holliday actually hitting for power this year, although that average is suffering as a result. You have a lot of guys like Piscotty, Diaz, and a lot of other players stepping up. The Cubs are so dominant, though, 48-24, as mentioned before. They have at least 23 wins, both on the road and at home, which is an amazing story in itself. And that rest of that division is really probably going to be sellers. I don't know what Pittsburgh is going to end up doing, 14 back in that division. five games back in the wild card, still an opportunity there, but they lost eight of the last 10, tough there. The Brewers, with some talent on their squad that they might end up trading, like Luke Roy, Braun, and some others, they already traded Chris Davis in the offseason to the A's. In the powerhouse here, average week, but power's been there. Cincinnati, you have Adam Duvall, who's finally breaking out. You have Jay Bruce having what looks to be a career year at this point, finally, an opportunity for them to trade him. So there's definitely a lot of pieces there, and by the way, Brandon Phillips as well. And out west, you have the San Francisco Giants firmly in control there, although the Dodgers are surging. They have 41-34 at LA Dodgers, 48-27 San Francisco Giants, who have played a few more games than the Chicago Cubs. Both teams have at least 23 wins, both home and on the road. And you have the Arizona Diamondbacks finally starting to heat up a little bit. Five games back of that wild card, probably not going to make a run of it in that division, 12.5 back, but winning seven out of their last 10, keeping pace there. But also you get some guys that are coming back. David Peralta did just go back in the DL again, I think this time for a back injury. But you have Paul Goldschmidt starting to heat up, and he can carry that club for a while. You have that pitching, Shelby Miller coming back off the DL. Today. You have Zach Greinke now, I believe, an 11-game winner, Steve. Who would have thought that, considering how poorly he started? So you have some of those pieces starting to click, and they might be one of those clubs that we're talking about making a big trade and a big splash. And never doubt Tony La Russa and what he's able to construct. And that wraps up the week, the standings. And just real quick, Steve, just go over to Major League All-Star voters, All-Star leaders right now. Do that real quick. Got the catching. This is all American League right now. Salvador Perez at catcher. Eric Hosmer at first base. Amazing, considering the future Hall of Famer Miguel Cabrera is almost 600,000 votes behind him. Second base, Jose Altuve, leading the pace there. Over 600,000 more votes than Robbie Cano. Tough there. Omar Infante somehow at 800,000 votes ahead of Adam Ian Kinsler. We'll talk more about that. There's another guy that does not deserve to be in the conversation, Omar Infante. Third base, you have Manny Machado above the MVP, which is truly amazing. And Mike Moustakas, who hasn't played in a while, is out for the rest of the year. Nearly a million votes, Steve, ahead of Nick Castellanos and Adrian Beltre again. This just kind of teased me up a little bit. Shortstop, you have Xander Bogaerts, over 2 million votes now. Outfield, you have Mike Trout leading the pace there. You have Jackie Bradley Jr. Mookie Betts now just moved up over Mark Trumbo for a starting position there. You have just an amazing talent pool from the Boston Red Sox representing the offensive side this year. There are Mark Trumbo and Lorenzo Cain there, and Jose Bautista at sixth. Alex Gordon, again, almost a million votes, has not played. And Ian Desmond was having a great season, probably the best of his career in Texas, under 700,000 votes. Polo Orlando has 116,000 more votes than him. Designated hitter, of course, David Ortiz leading the pace there, 2.6 million. By the way, Steve, if what I've said hasn't pissed anybody off so far, how about Kendrys Morales, who's having an awful season, has 105,000 votes, who tied for the Major League lead in RBIs at 62 with Nolan Arenado of the National League. Nick Castellanos having a career year for the Detroit Tigers as well, going back to the third base side. National League, I know I'm storming through these, but keep pace. National League catcher position, Yadier Molina, up above Buster Posey, and then Wilson Ramos bringing up the rear there. Really should be flipped. Ramos should be on top. You have first base, you have Anthony Rizzo setting the pace there, 2.2 million votes. You have Ben Zobrist at over 2 million votes on the at second base position. He actually just got hurt. I think it was a foot injury. So see if he ends up being able to play or if it requires a trip to the DL. You have third base. You have Chris Bryant up there above Nolan Arenado, who's, again, MVP candidate. Shortstop, Addison Russell, leading Trevor Story, and Corey Sager. Corey Sager's had one of the best months in baseball, or the best last 30 games in baseball. Now, I believe 15 home runs, 16 home runs, something like that. 700,000 votes there. Shortstop, outfield, you have Dexter Fowler, who's come off some from that amazing start from the beginning of the season. Then you have Bryce Harper, Yoenis Cespedes, Jason Hayward, who's not really played this year, and Ryan Braun, and then Jorge Soler above Carlos Gonzalez and Andrew McCutchen and Starling Marte as well. So, again, a lot of scandal there, a lot of stuff that pisses me off, but something that we have to cover. We'll continue talking about that as we get closer to the All-Star game, which is July 12th. Really looking forward to that home run derby against Steve. Last year with the new format was absolutely electric. You had Todd Frazier, hometown hero, making a big splash last year. I'm really, really looking forward to that this year.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. You know, the way they changed the home run derby, the way it ended up last year, you know, was a lot of fun to watch. And I think it played a little bit better and guys had, you know, a lot of fun doing it. But you brought up one guy that I want to get your opinion on. Is Jason Hayward the next Carl Crawford in that type of contract that he signed?
I, you know how I received that contract and the money that they spent on him. I don't know if he's a Carl Crawford in the sense that I think he'll bring more value than Crawford did. He's showing that he's a little more fragile the last couple of years, but I think he has more leadership credentials, definitely much better field than Carl Crawford was. So when you look at it, I think he's a little bit above that, but I think the end result is going to be that when we look at this contract, when it's finally over, we're going to say, what the heck were they thinking? And there's a lot of contracts where we can say that, but yeah, I have to agree. The end result, I think, will be a Carl Crawford type scenario where they're going to try to unload him in a few years. And he's only 26. They got him during the best years of his career, potential best years of his career, but he's never actually shown that he can do what everyone expected him to do when he came on baseball. So I guess I'll pose that same question to you. Do you think he's in that conversation?
I definitely, as up to this point, you know, what he's produced for that type of money, he's definitely in that conversation. I mean, to me, when you sign that type of deal, you need to bring a ton of value to that ball club, even though it's being overshadowed by the other guys and the way the other guys are playing right now. I mean, at this point, when Chris Bryant's up and he continues to do what he's doing and put up those numbers, you know, what are they going to have to pay him if they gave, you know, Hayward that type of contract? You know, and I know they go into the analytics a lot more about the, you know, defensive player and the value he brings there, but you know, I just you know, I think Jason Hayward needs to be in a lineup that, you know, kind of constructs and fits around him to make him successful. And you know, he's just not in that lineup right now, and he's been you know, very fragile and just hasn't done, you know, what has been expected of him, you know, signing that, you know, huge multi-year deal.
Absolutely. So with that wraps up this week's show. We are going to get into our last lick, Steve. I imagine you want to lead off this week and talk about, you know, whatever you want to talk about, which is probably another sport other than baseball.
That is right. you touched on it a little bit earlier, but my last lick is going to be LeBron James, the NBA, and the city of Cleveland. You know, what a tremendous job that the Cleveland Cavaliers did, being the only team in history to come back from 3-1 in the finals, you know, against a team that, you know, we talk about all the time, you know, in the Golden State Warriors, having a record year, winning, you know, 73 games, only losing 9, and for the Cavaliers and what they did, not only to win the NBA championship, but what they did for a city that was in a drought and one that was just thirsty for a championship. You know, LeBron James had a tremendous, tremendous series. I mean, you know, you got help by Love and Kyrie Irving, but, you know, the pinnacle is, you know, James was the centerpiece of what they needed to do. And, you know, he stepped up and he said what he was going to do when he came back to the city of Cleveland. And then I'm sure you've seen it on TV or maybe you didn't, but, you know, when they had that parade, there was 1.2 million people in downtown Cleveland. They had to shut down the streets they had to move people out of the way to get the cars to run through the streets because of this championship. And you know, it just was an amazing run for them. You know, they changed their coach in mid-season. Ty Lue came in, you know, changed the dynamic of that team, and you know, the rest is history. You know, congratulations to the Cleveland Cavaliers for the NBA championship and bringing it to the city of Cleveland, who has been just waiting for something like this to happen for a long time, and just happy it's happened. And now hopefully they can bring one in another sport.
Absolutely. Now, the Cleveland Indians looking good this year. We'll see what they end up doing, but certainly the city of Cleveland craving a championship for a really long time, finally getting one. LeBron James putting the city on his back. Again, that's not to overshadow some of the other guys that are on the team that have done great. Even Kevin Love at the end had his had some great moments. Trace Thompson, Kyrie Irving, of course, what he did. But LeBron James, 31 years old, notching another ring on that finger, another championship to hoist. Triple-double in his last game. What I tell people all the time about LeBron James is you can't look at his stats. If you look at it, the regular season, 25 points per game. That's not a terrible stat, but you got to look at what he's evolved himself into and being a guy who dishes the ball out more. He's more Mr. Triple-double now than he is Mr. 40 points per game, which you can get 6-7 he could do. But by the way, Game 7, when they needed him most, triple-double, and played 47 minutes on the court. Even if he doesn't score, he can do a lot of things, but he commands that squad, expected a lot of everybody, including J.R. Smith. J.R. Smith had his moments. Kyrie Irving, he was very hard on Kyrie. They almost broke up those two. And, you know, look what ended up happening there. He was so hard on him from stuff that I've read and heard. And again, he just expects to do great things, and he's done it. 31 years old, going to be 32 in December, the second to last day of the year is his birthday. He's just been an amazing talent in basketball. He's been the face of basketball for a long time. There's a reason for it. It's like he's been around for, you know, 100 years, Steve. He's been around for a long time coming out of high school. And he's another one of those guys, actually, by the way. He's not going to be going to Rio, but he has an opportunity to opt out of his contract now. Let's see what he ends up doing now that he's brought that championship to the city of Cleveland and kind of got that monkey off his back. Well, I'm going to stay on basketball, a team that's kind of been rebuilding, and I put that in air quotes, the New York Knicks, bringing in Phil Jackson and what I consider a blemish and a stain on his career, his amazing championship legacy. He's trying to turn that face around, that team around. They brought Derrick Rose in. They traded the Encino man, Robin Lopez, Jose Calderon, and Jerrion Grant, who I think might actually be a really good player. They got him. They got Derrick Rose. They got Holiday and a future second-round pick, which I believe is for next year. I think that was a great trade for them. They only have 1 year of Derrick Rose. They might end up getting a great performance. They're trying to lure in Kevin Durant, who's also meeting and talking to a bunch of other teams. Basketball offseason is going to be really good, really spicy if you think about it. There's even talk about Durant going to the Golden State Warriors. Imagine that. But that would be really taking away your biggest competition, which is the Thunder, if you're the Warriors, and almost guaranteeing, if not for the Spurs, another trip to the finals. But basketball has got a lot of great storylines going on right now. I know we don't talk about it much, but a lot there. The offseason hockey has started as well, so you're going to see some guys moving, changing jerseys. So this is really an exciting time for fans to get some hope leading into the season. Some of these teams are going to make splashes and make big moves. So with that, that'll wrap up this week's show. If you're a Knicks fan, just stay tuned to what they might end up doing. You never know, almost in kind of desperation mode to try to do something. While Phil Jackson actually has some motivation to do something there, it's going to be interesting to see what the Knicks do and what everybody around the league does. And even the Lakers with that new coach, Luke Walton and Kobe Bryant going away and retiring. It's going to be interesting to see what happens around the league. So again, that wraps up this week's show. Please stay tuned to carsanethekid.com for more details on future shows. Steve, I know your schedule is going to be really dicey, even harder than it's been with everything else going on off the field as well, meaning meetings and all the stuff that you guys have to do and the logs and journals that you have to keep on players. You might not be able to do the show for the next week or two, but I have this for you. be well as doing your full-time thing, but we might end up having a special guest host in the next week or two. So just want to drop that there for our audience. And again, thank you as always for your support and for making the show as special as it is.
Absolutely. Another great show, a lot of information, and a lot of good talking points. And we just want to thank you for joining us, and join us again in the future, and we look forward to having you back. So everybody have a
Excellent.
Great weekend, and we will be talking to you soon.
Absolutely. If you're a baseball fan or a sports fan in general, go out there and vote. I'm trying to get the vote out here, Steve, because the Chicago Cubs fans and obviously the Royals fans are so rabid. We want to see a good game. The game counts as you continue to press. The game counts, so get the right players in there and make sure we have the right kind of game. We're seeing players that have no business even being in the conversation getting a million-plus votes. So now for Major League Baseball, it's a classic, which promises to be a great game regardless, but can make it even better, more challenging, more competitive. But that home run derby is something I'm really looking forward to. So until next week, thank you all for listening. Stay tuned to CarsayandTheKid.com for more details on the show. Thanks all.